are going to go to our first guest tonight, and our guest and only guest, Larry Baker, has been a friend of mine for many, many, many years. Larry Baker is the production stage manager at Drury Lane Theater in Oak Brook Terrace. Larry and I were high school classmates at Morton West and Berwyn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's so nice to see you, and it seems like it's been a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
And we've come so in different ways, in different directions, we both kind of end up at WGN.
Back together.
You told me about your connections with WGN all these years, and you had
yes.
a bunch of them, which are very interesting.
And first I want to say happy Mother's Day to my mom, who is deceased as well, and my mom, also German, was born and raised on a farm, Frankfort, Illinois. So every summer I would spend part of my summer vacation at Grandma and Grandpa's farm. And every morning we would wake up with the roosters, and then we'd go down to have breakfast at the kitchen table, and there was the voice of Orion Samuelson
every morning. That's not really early.
Waking us up,
yeah.
And so that was my introduction from my earliest memories.
And do you remember him talking about pork futures?
Pork bellies.
And now I don't even know, does pork have a future?
Obviously.
Not a long one.
Who doesn't love their pork? But, no, so that was my first introduction to WGN, and from there, it just always felt like home to me. It always felt familiar.
Sure.
Then, when I was working my way through college, I did singing telegrams. And so I used to work for Haywires, and I got booked to do a singing telegram on the Cerebral Palsy Telethon, which was at the Medina Temple at the time, hosted by, and I was interviewed by, Wally Phillips.
Oh!
The legend, the man himself. Then, a few years later, I started stage managing, and I was stage managing at the Drury Lane South, the old Martinique at 95th and Western, and I was stage managing Wally's Cafe, which starred Bob Denver, Gilligan. And he got booked to come and speak late night on Eddie Schwartz Show.
Oh.
So we spent a late night, early morning in the studio with Eddie. Then, went away for a while. I came back. I was a personal assistant for Sandy Duncan, the actress. We were booked and came here to Chicago to do a benefit called Heartstrings, and she was booked on Roy Leonard's show one Saturday morning. So then my connection to Roy. Then from there, I did Spelling Bee at Water Tower. We did the Kathy and Judy summer camp. And then from there, I did Jersey Boys, and I brought the Jersey Boys into this very studio to be interviewed by John Williams.
Wow, you just can't stay away. We need to get a protective order.
and then for years, I've done the AIDS Walk with Dean Richards. So I feel like I'm home. This is so surreal.
It is, and we're going to be losing the studio, unfortunately.
I know.
I think they say about a month. So soak it all in. It may be the last time you're here, Larry.
That's great.
You know, I want to talk just briefly about this movie that I just saw. I was at a pre-screening for the movie Book Club. It was written by two young people, one of whom is from Chicago, and he was the son of a federal judge who I've appeared before many, many times, Bill Holderman. Anyway, it was with Jane Fonda and Diane Keaton, and it's just a lovely little movie, and it's about older women who reach the 50 Shades of Grey and talk about their sex lives. You were telling me back in the green room that you work with Jane Fonda, and you had a story about her. I want to hear about that.
I used to do benefits all the time, still do, and so there was a Broadway Cares benefit that we did in New York, and at the time, Jane was appearing in an off-Broadway play, and so for six weeks, the shows would do curtain speeches and collect money, and then at the end of the 6 weeks, they'd celebrate by the shows would put on a skit representing their show and what they were there for, and Jane was very... she's competitive, and so she wanted to raise the most money for the off-Broadway shows, which she did, and then she helped put together their skit, which was a show about Mozart, and so her cast was all there on stage, and Jane made a grand entrance and a full-length fur with her dog, and then dropped the fur to the floor and had on her 1977 workout outfit,
and they did
a workout to Mozart music.
Oh, my gosh. That doesn't surprise me. And in this movie, she looks fabulous. She's 80 years old, and she's like a freak of nature. She really is. And even if you account for private chefs and all the best plastic surgery you can get, she still looks really, really good.
Good genes.
Yeah, she's got really good genes. Let's talk a little bit about the Drury Lane. Now, you're the production stage manager at the Drury Lane, and South Pacific is not playing.
That's right.
And is playing till
June 17th.
Okay, we're going to be giving out tickets to South Pacific, and I'm going to ask for some call-ins later in the show. I've been to many of the productions that you've invited me to, and I just have been really amazed at the quality. Is there some idea that suburban theater is just not as good as Chicago Loop Theater?
Oh, I don't think so. I think Chicago has over 250 resident companies here. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
So there's something for everyone. And if you live within a certain area or you have a liking to a certain, have a certain taste in theater, that's where you're going to gravitate to. And whether it's at a storefront or it's at the Lyric or it's at, you know, out in Paramount or out at the Drury Lane, I think there's something for everybody here in town. And I don't think we've gone past that era of this is specifically for this generation or this is specifically for this age group. And I think with social media as well, it's so out there, and people have so much access to information as to what shows they want to see and what's it about. And I think there's something for everybody. And the fact that everybody's doing good work.
Yeah. Now, Drury Lane tends to, would you say, it's kind of more mainstream theater as far as it's not, you guys do, you know, Chicago, and you do Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and you do some of the more traditional, is that what you call it?
We also have done some premieres, some world premieres, mostly musicals. We do mostly musicals and then one play a year. And so it's kind of, we have a strong subscriber base that musicals are what they want to see.
Yeah.
And we're either doing a classic like we are now with Rodgers and Hammerstein, South Pacific, or we're doing something brand new, which they like to take that ride as well with us.
Tell us briefly about South Pacific, because there's probably a whole generation out there who don't recall what that's about or what, you know, what it was a fabulous musical, and it won all kinds of Tony Awards and back in the day. Can you tell us a little bit?
It opened 69 years ago. We celebrated the anniversary while we were running. It was 69 years ago it opened on Broadway. And so sometimes people see these shows or hear the name South Pacific and think, well, that's dated. That's that old show. And I think people tend to come back as this is going to lunch with an old friend. It's something familiar. It's something that you know. It's something that you can sit back and enjoy, not be surprised by. And I think it has glorious music, and it's relevant today as it was 69 years ago, because we still are sending our young people off to war.
Right.
And we still have a very important lesson in Act Two, because Nellie Forbush is dealing with her intolerance of people that are different. And Lieutenant Cable sings a song called You've Got to Be Carefully Taught, which was written by Rodgers and Hammerstein 69 years ago. And the lyric is, you've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught.
Wow.
It's haunting.
That's a great line that is just completely and totally relevant now.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, is all good theater timeless? Is that one of the elements that makes
it's dated.
A play or a musical timeless?
I think things certainly can be dated, but it'll take you back to that time. I think theater is an experience in that today we had a full house of all ages. It was Mother's Day, and they were all there to see South Pacific. And you know that there are people there for their very first theatrical experience. And as I always say, the people that enjoyed the show today, it's an experience that happened only once. It's kind of magical in that way, the theater experience. When the lights go down, you have that excitement, anticipation of what's going to happen. Well, the show we do Wednesday, it's going to be a completely different audience, and it's going to be a different experience. It won't be. What we just did will never happen again. And I think audiences feel that.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
You can't help but feel like this is special. And also, audiences need to realize they're a part of the experience. They're a huge part of it, whether they laugh or they applaud or they're another character in the play, really.
We're talking to Larry Baker with the Drury Lane Theater. I'm going to take a break. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We have some great momisms coming in. 708 area code, consider the source and ignore the ignorance. Another texter said he was the oldest child, and his mother called him the burnt pancake because you always screw up your first one. I really love that one. And another caller from the 563 area code said, the mother always said, if your pork isn't cooked enough, you're going to get trichinosis. But in all of his years, he's never known one single person that had trichinosis, right? And the other, and what was the other thing you had to rest before you, after you ate, was it 20 minutes
before you
went swimming?
Yes.
And now they say that that's false because you shouldn't go swimming when you're hungry or when your stomach is empty, because you could cramp up even more likely than if you had eaten something. So who knows? There was another one that said, if it is to be, it is up to thee. Meaning, if you want something to happen in your life, you better make it happen. Right? That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Another 847 area code says, whenever stuff happened to the mother and she was suffering, she was a good Catholic woman, she'd say, it's better than hanging off the cross. I don't know. Interesting. But those things stick with you. Good, bad, sure, or wrong, false, or true. We're here with Larry Baker, who's the production stage manager at Drury Lane Theater. Okay, you have to explain what a production stage manager is.
Okay, sure. I would tell you it's a combination between air traffic controller,
okay,
puppeteer with a marionette, and the plate spinner guys from Bozo Circus.
Okay.
So you're keeping all the balls in the air with one hand while tossing fire batons with the other, and it's a little bit of everything. You're responsible for, I consider myself responsible for the entire theatrical experience. So whether it's starting in rehearsal and doing schedules and keeping things organized and breaks and things for the director, and then you get into tech, and that's when we really do our magic of having that fine-tuning moment of making a cue work so that the lights, the sound, the music, the acting, the dance, and my calling of a cue all make it happen at the same time. That's theater magic.
What is the difference between being a production stage manager for a musical versus a play?
About 300 light cues.
Okay.
The plays are very different. The plays are usually one set, and so there will be slight adjustments to it, like Cannon on a Hot Tin Roof is more of a unit set situation. And South Pacific, we take you through 5, 6, 7 locations. So it's often less. It's just technically less. But you still, still the same amount of work goes into it. You know, you still have the same amount of rehearsal time. You still have the same amount of understudy rehearsal time and all of that once the show opens, because that's the other job as production stage manager. You're responsible for the show. And so once the director leaves after opening, you maintain the artistic intent and design of the show.
Now, the actors who come in and audition, they're from all over the country, right?
They are.
I mean, because I was surprised. You would think Drury Lane Theater, they're playing Chicago. People are from all over the country, from New York, from Broadway, from California. And they come in and they stay for the duration of the run. And these are people maybe who have taken different parts in different plays, or do they mostly play the same parts?
Oh, they do everything. I mean, actors always want to be challenged by something new. With South Pacific, our lead, Emile Debeck, is Robert Cuccioli, who is Tony nominee for Jekyll and Hyde on Broadway. And he's never done South Pacific. Although you would think, well, that's a perfect fit. So he got the call and said, yes, I'll do that. And also because Drury Lane's been around a good long time and the word is out, and a lot of times people will check with their friends in New York, because I always say 6 degrees of separation, I think, is for the average everyday guy, but in theater it's 3 degrees, because you can just start talking all of a sudden, oh, I know, and theater's a family and we all know each other, so you just call your friends and go, I saw you worked at Drury Lane, what's that like?
When you see something like Hamilton go off the charts, where people are, who don't like rap, who are going to the plays and loving it, and you see young people, actually my office is literally probably 12 steps away from the theater, and when I go sometimes for lunch, I'll see that line around the block, and you see kids of all ages, you see older people, you see people of color, you see people from all walks of life who are there to enjoy something that is historic, that is rap, that is cool. When you see a play like that, does that change how people view theater, and do you see more people attending theater because of a play like that, or is there always going to be that mainstream of people who like to go see a musical?
I think it certainly opened up people's eyes to theater. I think whether it, the young people, and like you said, social media helped that, because the word got out and then everybody had to see it. And I think anytime you can expose a young person to it, you're gaining an audience forever. because we have so many, we also have a Theater for Young Audiences program at Drury Lane, and this last Christmas we did a Christmas carol, and I invited my neighbor in our building, who's a grandmother, to bring her two kids to come see Christmas carol. And so she called me the next day and she said, well, we'd like to all come. I'm going to bring the mom and dad and the two kids. And you have to know that the dad is the most excited because 25 years ago, when he was in second grade, he came to see Christmas Carol at Drury Lane at Oak Brook. And now, all these years later, is going to bring his two children to their first theatrical experience of seeing Christmas Carol. So I think it's putting it out there. It's just giving people the opportunity. I think once you get them, they want to see something else. I think there's a thirst and a drive for art. It's like art in schools. We need to keep doing art, whether it's dance, whether it's music, whether it's painting. It's giving people that experience. And once they see something like Hamilton,
right,
then they want to see something else.
Absolutely. And I do know that it's one of those repeats. People want to go back and see it two, three, four times.
Sure. You'll see different cast members in it.
Sure.
The show will be different.
And you'll understand some of the words that you might miss the first,
sure,
second, or third time.
You'll go out and get the CD.
Rapid fire and amazing. And then you might read the history and go back and now understand what they're trying to portray as far as American history.
Who would have thought a show about Alexander Hamilton would become the biggest show of all time?
It's a hard sell, isn't it, to say it's a rap, you know? But you know what? I always say it's not as much as it's rap. It's more like Shakespearean in that it's like couplets. It's like rhymes that are intelligent. And I don't mean that rap is not intelligent, mm-hmm, or cannot be intelligent. I'm just saying that your expectation is going to be that it's nonsensical, but it's so intelligent. And, mm-hmm, you know, even within a 5-minute period, you want to go back and read those words because they're so meaningful.
Sure. Well, and I think it's going to give you the idea of, let's go out and open a book. Let's go out and read more. Let's go find, you thirst for more. And whether it's just about Alexander Hamilton or it's about, let's go see another show. Let's go see another show at that place or another show by Lin-Manuel Miranda or, you know, the experience is so unique that I think people, once you get them, want to come back.
I think that's true. If you have any questions for Larry Baker about theater or any comments on anything you've seen recently, give us a call here at 981-7200, 981-7200, or give us a text. Let's take a break, and we come back. I want to ask you about what are the biggest mishaps that happen, wardrobe malfunctions, people forgetting lines.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of like to see the bloopers in theater because it is live, and
yes,
you never know what's going to happen live.
Okay.
You're listening to the Karen Conti Show live on WGN. That was an excerpt from South Pacific. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give away two tickets to see South Pacific at the Drury Lane Theater, thanks to Larry Baker, the production stage manager. Give us a call here. The third caller will get two tickets to Drury Lane to see South Pacific, 981-7200, 981-7200. Larry, we talked about some mishaps that happened because you're kind of in charge as a stage manager. You're sort of in charge of everything. You got to make sure the audience is okay. You're going to make sure the stage is okay and the lighting and the scenery and the wardrobes. What is the worst thing that can happen, or what, maybe do you have any like horror stories?
Well, I mean, the worst thing that can happen for us is having to stop a show. That's always, because things will happen on stage that an audience sees happen, like a glass will tip over and we'll spill water on stage. So then the next person that has an entrance just happens to have a rag and goes down and they're blocking and cleans it up because you don't want water on stage. So that's something that we can handle on stage that the audience is aware of the situation. There are other times that they have no idea. We've had times where an actor gets sick during a show. So then you get the understudy dressed. You put the understudy in microphone and costume. Sick actor walks out the stage door. Healthy understudy walks in and the audience has no idea, which sometimes can be very confusing, especially if they've all of a sudden changed sex or ethnicity, which happens. That happens. And so then, you know, top of intermission is when you make the announcement for the remainder of the program, the role of so-and-so would be played by so-and-so. So then the audience is like, oh, now I understand. But we also had, we were on the road with Jersey Boys and we were in Boston. And we had a fire alarm go off midway through Act 2.
Oh, my gosh.
So you have to evacuate. There was no question about it. So, and it's snowing outside. It's cold. Cast is in this hallway or outside alleyway. Audience is all out on the street. And so they start filtering, you know, back into the theater because it was an all clear and the fire department comes. And so I start talking them through, here's where we're going to pick up and here's where the show is going to start up again with this song, with this blocking, blah, blah, blah. And I'll make an announcement to the audience that we're doing it. As I'm doing that, we now spontaneously hear 2,000 people in the theater start, I love you, baby, and if it's quite all right. Which was such a rush for us. So then I had to top that with, ladies and gentlemen, and now back to Jersey Boys! And like cheers and screams. And those are the moments that audiences remember forever. I was there the night of blah, blah, blah.
That makes it very, very memorable. Do you ever, I always think about all the wardrobe changes that you see, and you know, these people are dancing and they're sweating and they're jumping around and they're doing all this stuff. Do things just like split and rip, and then do you have a backup costume? Like what, or maybe the costume doesn't go on as quickly as you need it to go on. What do you do in that case?
That's when either the actor leaves the stage and puts on the costume they just wore or the next one, because you don't have two of the same thing ready to go.
No.
And there's, you know, things, zippers get stuck or get ripped out, and you punt. You put on the next thing, or you put on a jacket, or you just fudge through it. We had one show that I was working on, and one of the girls went out, and she was doing a big dance number, a little halter top, with the halter top came completely off. Just
lockdown,
which is everyone's nightmare of naked on stage. Well, it was for a special event for a group of mostly men that could not have had a better time at that show that evening, screaming and cheering. And we thought, what did she just do? I mean, she was singing her country medley. How good was it? She comes off devastated. Well, you have to just pick up and do it. So, of course, the next time she walked on stage, cheering, screaming, hooting and hollering, we couldn't wait to get out of there. But that's one of those things where you carry on.
Yeah,
you know, you
yeah.
just do what you do. We had an experience here in Chicago where I was working for Disney at the time. And at the Chicago Theater, they used to do, here in Chicago, when Disney would do their premieres, they would do a live show before the movie. And when Pocahontas came out, there was a 20-minute live show before the show with a group of singers and dancers and Disney characters, and Aladdin and Jasmine flew across the stage. Well, a couple days into the show, the tallest dancer gets injured and can't go on. So we have a production meeting, and director choreographer looks around the room, and the Disney characters are very specific as to what they look like, and heights are very specific. So they look around the room, and all eyes hit me, and they said, Larry, I'll tell you. And I said, 5'11"? Come here. Well, that night on stage, I went on as Baloo, the 6'2" blue bear, with King Louie, singing and dancing to Bare Necessities in front of 2,000 screaming people at the Chicago Theater. Well, I had to call Mom, because this was like a dream come true, and I'm sure she like sped down the Stevenson to get to the next show that night, because I was like fulfilling a dream. I was a Disney character.
And we weren't going to call you second string.
No.
I would never call you second string, Larry.
No. That's the way it was.
That's the way it was.
So I went on one time.
We have a lot of good text here. I've seen South Pacific 10 or more times. Been my favorite musical since I was very young. I've seen Phantom 6 times. My Fair Lady, many numerous times. What is your favorite show of all the shows that you've managed? What's a fun one for you to manage?
That's tough. I always think, for me, shows are like my kids. You know, you love them all in a different way. I can honestly say there's never been a show that, because I find ways to love it so that I can give energy and support to it. And I've had personal bests. Like I had the opportunity to do the Radio City Christmas Spectacular 2 years that it played in Los Angeles. And that was thrilling because you had 36 Rockettes and you had camels and you had donkeys and you had an orchestra. And because my first time in New York was at holiday time when I was in my 20s, and I sat three rows from the back at Radio City Music Hall and saw the Radio City Christmas Spectacular. So to actually have that opportunity was a dream come true. I've also had Billy Elliot was a show at Drury Lane
that
was a personal best for me, in just, it was technically A powerful show. Rachel Rockwell directed it, and the young people that we had in it were extraordinary talents. And to see a show like that and support a show like that with these people telling this powerful story and these great young dancers that are just starting out, it was a joy to do all the time, every night.
I have a text. This is very typical, but Hamilton has changed my life. I've seen it 7 times. I took a friend in New York last week to see it. I'm going to see it 3 more times. The best show I've ever seen. Why? We talked a little bit about Hamilton, but why, you know, and I'm not sure that you've seen it yet, but why do you think it's garnering so much such praise over and above some of the other wonderful musicals that we've seen over the years?
It's a puzzlement, to borrow another Russian term. No one knows. I mean, if Hamilton's were that easy to create, everyone would be doing it.
Sure.
I mean, even the creators have to be scratching their heads and shaking their heads, because we all set out to do our best work. You never know how it's going to land and who it's going to affect. And so I think it's just one of those great mysteries of just, it just hit at the right time with the right temperament and with the right sensibility, and people just responded in a huge way.
Larry, I'm going to ask you one last question here. It seems like Larry, according to this 847 text, would know a lot about many aspects of the theater. First position, yes, absolutely. Did you take classes, or did you get some training in school, or was it all on the job, like an apprentice situation?
Well, I actually speak to student groups now, and when I was a kid, there were no stage management classes. I just literally, a director said, I want you to stage manage my show, and I said, I've never done it, and he said, I'll teach you. And then I watched other people do it, and as I always say to students, there's no one way to do what I do. We all just bring our own selves and our own personality and our own life's, you know, story to it. And so I just did it and just kept on doing it and continue learning by doing it.
Larry Baker, you were a classmate of mine many years ago. We're not going to say how many years ago, but I want to know, do you remember the Falcon fight song?
I totally do. Do you?
I have it in my head right now. So I was in the band.
Okay. You were in the band, and yes. I was in choir, and we learned it the first day of school. Okay, ready? Stand up and fight, stand for the right, and stand behind the green and white.
I think that's all.
We'll score again, and in the end, we'll win this game and fame for JSM. And when it's done,
now JSM,
we have won.
J. Sterling Morton. There you go.
Nothing can stop us. No one can stop us. Victory in every game. Let's make the rafter ring ever after. Now, I don't know what I had for breakfast, but I can still remember the Morton fight song.
You obviously had too much sugar for breakfast.
That's it.
Thank you so much for joining
us. This is so fun.
I'm sure you'll come again, and I want everyone to go out and see South Pacific. It's playing at the Drury Lane Theater until mid-June, and then the next...
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof,
and I'm going to come out and see that one.
Excellent.
And then
we're doing Little Shop of Horrors, and then Beauty and the Beast, and then Mamma Mia, which is the first show I did on Broadway.
Oh, sounds fabulous.
So fun.
Thank you so much, Larry Baker.
Thank you.